The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Konnichiwa. This is episode number 15 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back with some brand new technology. We are trying out something called Mumble tonight, so hopefully it all works out. We're going to start off with these shout-outs. Our first shout-out goes to Lewis Kaplan, who is a grinder that I know from the Chicago, Wisconsin area. Lewis sent us a picture the other day of a horrifying-looking bathroom that he walked into while he was at a store for a PPTQ. And we haven't talked about bathrooms for quite a while. We actually posted the picture on our Twitter account, but for those who missed it or who don't have Twitter, we're going to go ahead and describe it for you. So first off, there was no toilet paper. There was no toilet seat. There was no paper towel. And there was a sign over the toilet that says, if you have to crap, go somewhere else. The plumbing is bad. Now, without naming the store, Chris, I think you said you were thinking of going to a PPTQ there. Is that right?
Yes. And I won't name the store either, but it is where my mom lives. So if I ever wanted to pop in, it would be very easy to do so.
And probably to pop back out.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. Did you all see that?
Yeah, and it wasn't like there's not, like, there's an empty toilet paper roll. There's, like, no, I don't know what that bar is called, that goat that you put through the middle of the toilet paper roll, but it is just, like, not there at all. Like, there's just nothing.
I believe the technical term is toilet paper roll holder.
Ooh, Chris with the fancy lingo there.
Yeah, even our most jaded listeners, you know, we've had a couple of listeners who, you know, they enjoy the show, but they're like, oh, Erin, the bathrooms aren't that bad. You guys are just picking. Even our most jaded listeners were like, nope, I would want a refund. You would not catch me at that store. And it was pretty bad.
I don't know if you guys have ever, like, have you ever fallen in a toilet, like, in the middle of the night or something? You go in and somebody leaves the toilet seat up and you just kind of sit into the toilet.
Yes, I've been there.
That's not the best. And I feel like that's just how this store runs it.
Yeah,
I hope not.
Yeah, I've never been there. The only thing I kept thinking of was, like, what kind of Xena maneuvering do you have to do to, like, be able to go? Because you can't sit. So, like, you're boom, 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 boom. Like, you're just trying to angle and hover. And, like, it was just, I guess I have an advantage, but you all don't. But I'd be okay.
Well, actually, when I went in there, I was going to be like, okay, I'll, you know, say I'm going to buy something that I want to go use the bathroom. And then if I go in there and it looks like that, my plan was to come back out and be like, I'm just curious. But when you do have, you know, women come in here, how do they use the bathroom if they need to sit down? And I want to see their genuine response to that.
I don't even think it's unique to women. Like, I have to wonder, like, even the guys who listen to our show, like, Lewis is a cisgender guy, and even he was like, no way. Like, you know, I wonder what goes through people's minds when they look at that bathroom and think, yeah, this is okay. Like, I know when I look at my bathroom, if I have a smudge on the mirror or if I have, you know, maybe some hair in the sink and I know that company's coming, I want to clean that up. Like, I don't want people to see my bathroom looking like that. I don't want to use my bathroom when it looks like that. And I just wonder what people's thought processes are where they're like, oh, this will be fine.
Yeah.
I know it was really bad. I was kind of like, operate a business this way.
No, sir.
Yeah. Our second shout out goes to Dad of 23N1, who left us a short and sweet 4-star review on iTunes. And he says, I like the podcast. A few of the flavors are not my taste, but you do have good content. Well, thank you very much for that, Dad. Women of Excellence, our new segment. This week, we are nominating our friend, Brenda Smith. For those who don't remember, Brenda Smith is the young woman who was harassed on Twitch chat while playing in her first ever feature match at a Star City Games Open. I actually got to meet Brenda when I was in Las Vegas, and she was super lovely, and she's very determined to get on the Pro Tour. I think she said that this is her year. She wants to do whatever she can to get on the train, and with that in mind, she's going to start streaming so that she can get some more practice and so that she can get more comfortable playing on camera, because that certainly didn't deter her from wanting another feature match. You all can check her out at twitch.tv/BrendaIsBored. And we're all pretty big fans of her here.
Yeah, you go, Brenda.
Yeah, so Yay. We wish her well.
Go, Brenda.
Yeah. All right, so let's get started. So GP Charlotte was this past weekend. Almost 3,000 people showed up to play Modern. It seems like the meta game was really diverse. We saw Goryeo's Vengeance, Ad Nauseam, and Elves in the top eight. Elves ended up taking the whole thing down. Which decks impressed you guys? Like, what did you like seeing?
I thought Elves was pretty cool. And I think, I remember on the last time we talked about Modern, we talked about how sometimes the meta online can be a little bit ahead of the meta in person. And when I saw that Elves won the whole tournament, I was reminded of Magnus Lanto's collected company Elves deck that won the Magic Online Championship a month or so ago. And I thought that was really cool that Collected Company and Elves are just taking down all these tournaments. Like, we barely saw it in coverage on Saturday and Sunday, and it came out in full force in the top eight. That's just really cool.
Yeah, I was very happy to see Goryeo's Vengeance personally, because it was Goryeo's Vengeance with a twist. So if I understand the deck correctly, Bob Wang, or Wong, wrote a post on Channel Fireball about it. And the plan was to reanimate a Grizzlebrand, if I'm understanding it correctly, draw the seven cards, and then you have a Sickening Shoal or some sort of green shoal that lets you gain life if you discard a green card. So you're just sort of drawing and discarding and drawing and getting all this life, and then using that life to fuel Grizzlebrand. And then the plan is to reanimate a Borborygmos Enraged, and then discard a whole bunch of land and win that way. And it sounds like the deck was able to win on like turn two, turn three, turn four. And it was very scary. And I thought it was a very neat twist on Goryeo's Vengeance, whereas typically it's just Goryeo's into an Emrakul and call it a day.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I was sad I didn't get to see it actually being piloted. I saw the deck tech and I was like, oh man, that's so crazy. I just love it all.
I really liked... 15th place was Zach Elsick, and he was playing Lantern Control. And we have a guy in my town, his name is Murph, who has played this deck, and we were all just kind of like, oh, Murph, that deck. And then I showed up to Modern on Monday, and I was like, Murph, did you see the deck? And he was like, yeah, it does stuff. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, but I'm sorry.
The top 16 was just really diverse. I liked, you know, when you look through every deck and every deck kind of just has its own thing. I just really like that about Modern.
Yeah.
I saw that even LSV went and bought Lanterns on Magic Online. So maybe Lanterns will be the next big thing.
Woo.
I don't know. I'm looking at the list right now. So for those at home, if I'm understanding this correctly, so there are Codex Shredders, Ghoul Caller's Bell, Lantern of Insight, and you basically control what your opponents draw. So if they're about to draw something, you're always able to see the top card of their library with the lantern. And if you see them about to draw something that could hurt you, you make them get rid of it with either the bell or the shredder. Mm-hmm. And then you lock them down with cards like Ensnaring Bridge, Pithing Needle. And what's really the win condition here? Like, I see...
They mill you, or what was he telling me? It's mill or something else, but they're pretty slow.
Yeah, I can see this. I think I would classify this as what I call a bore you to tears deck. Where it's like, I may not get you to zero life, and you may have cards in your library, but you're just going to concede because you're tired of dealing with me kind of deck.
Right.
And I just saw there was Codex Shredder involved, and I'm like, oh, that's my love card. I love that card.
You're actually thinking of playing it at the PPTQ this weekend.
Oh, I don't have half the cards to do it, but I think if Chris Preston had his way, he'd be like, We'll get you the cards. Take care of it.
Man. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, I worry about Shatterstorm because that kind of seems like it could be a downer. And I don't know. I mean, I love a grindy deck as much as the next girl, but even this is grindy.
This is the definition of grind in the Webster's Dictionary.
Like, this is so grindy that I would be done transitioning by the time the games are over. Just, it would be bad. It would be like the time-lapse photography. That's what it would look like. So there was an interesting moment during GP Charlotte where Jared Silva miraculously showed up on screen during coverage and proceeded to explain that there was an issue in going into the finals where the Splinter Twin opponent had written Cavern of Souls on his deck list, but in actuality, it was a Tectonic Edge.
Or it might have been the other way around. I can't remember exactly, but he had
I think it
one
was
listed.
The other way.
Okay.
And was playing the other one.
Okay, and he was given a game loss and allowed to continue playing. And that last round went by really fast. Like, Elves was able to cinch that pretty neatly. So, Katie, as a judge, what did you think about all of that? Did you think it was handled well? Like, what do you think we can take away from this?
I thought it was handled really well. You know, Jared Silva definitely knows his stuff, and you know, after the Pro Tour with Chapin's call and all of that, that went with that, it seemed like people were, you know, curious as to what was happening, but a lot of people felt like it wasn't handled very well. And so I think Star City kind of just took it by the reins and handled it really well. I think Jared Silva misspoke just a little bit where he had said that they were matching the deck to the deck list. When in actuality, they let him continue playing and they matched the deck list to what deck he was playing. And I think that confused some people. I saw a few Twitter things that were trying to clarify it. But overall, I thought it was really well done. And I think that it's good for people to hear it from somebody like Jared or the head judge of whatever tournament where they're like, this is what happened. This is why we have to issue this game loss. This is the penalty. And I think all of that was done really well.
Now, help me understand something here, and I don't mean to sound like I'm, you know, being shady towards judges, but it was my understanding that there were deck lists. Like, don't they do deck checks prior to top eight starting? Like, am I wrong?
Generally, how I had thought that they do it is that they do deck list checks. I do deck checks before top eights, but maybe for some reason they did like two random ones. I've heard of people that, you know, don't check all of them, but they just roll a die to see which ones they're going to check and then they check those. I'm not really sure how that slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, because that's what I was curious about. And like I said, I don't mean to sound shady, but I mean, every event that I've ever been to, even though I've never made top eight because I'm not that good, I've certainly seen them. I've seen the boxes with like the fold-up deck list sticking out of it. And there's always been eight deck lists or eight deck boxes there. And I just assumed that was something that was completed before you even started the finals.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too. So, I mean, if, you know, two people were checking all eight lists, it's very possible that human error, they just missed it. If it's just like the one land and they didn't check it or whatever, but it's possible that they just didn't check some of the decks as well. So I'm not really sure.
Okay. So overall, it sounds like Modern is actually in a healthy place. And I was pleased to hear that Tron and Amulet Bloom didn't have a great showing.
That's fine with me. I don't want to deal with Tron because, you know, whatever's the hotness, everyone's like, oh, bring this to FNM. It's like, please don't. But there was a nice guy I played at FNM on Friday and he was playing Elves and he's like, oh, I haven't played in a long time. Well, obviously someone else was playing Elves too. They won the GP.
Yeah, anytime I see Elves, I'm so used to playing Legacy because that's what I've been spending time on. I just want to reanimate an Elesh Norn and just wipe their board. Or I want to reanimate an Iona and call green. And after I got done watching the finals, I went on Magic Online and threw together a Dredge Reanimator list. And I was like, all right, I'm ready, Elves. Come on. I've got some fatties for you. And then, of course, I didn't play Elves.
Maybe you should build the Goryeo's Vengeance deck.
I would like to, but Goryeo's Vengeance is up to $25 a piece now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. There are so many modern staples that have gone up lately.
Yeah, Goryeo's is 25 a pop. So. Through the Breach, I think, is 15 a piece. And then you have four Grizzlebrand, which are 20 to 30 each. And I only have one. And then the deck runs four Blood Moon in the sideboard. And then, you know, just a bunch of other stuff. There's no way I could get it together on short notice.
That's a bummer.
But it looked like fun, though. Like, it's something I could see myself playing for sure.
Yeah.
I see that our faux pod just kind of keeps hanging around. There's four copies in the top 16.
Ugh. Wow.
Yeah, and now they're starting to put Linvala in it, even though you can't get her with Collected Company, just trying to keep that pod dream going.
Somebody's got to keep the dream alive, I guess.
I'm not scared of Coco at all.
I mean, all of the creatures are solid. Like, I feel like it's a solid deck even without the actual combo. Like, all the creatures are just utility creatures that you can use to do other cool things.
Yeah, you can still cord for Linvala.
Yeah. I had a feeling this was going to happen, though. Like, I remember when the modern banning discussion was happening, you know, I wanted Pod to get banned because it was a bad matchup for, you know, the BG decks, and it was a bad matchup for Lone Pox, obviously. But I had a feeling that it wasn't going to be enough. Like you said, the creatures are so good. You could basically just turn it into a junk value deck and still do well between, you know, Cord, Kitchen Finks, Gavinny Township, Lingering Souls, Noble Hierarch. That's a deck right there. And I think we saw elements of that with Little Kid Junk when people tried to make that happen. And
with Wiltleaf.
Yeah, and that was scary in its own right, even without the shenanigans of the combo.
Mm-hmm.
So our next topic is an article that was posted to Star City Games the other day, written by our friend Megan Wolf, who appeared on one of our earlier episodes from Magic the Amateuring. We got to hang out with them in Vegas, and they were lovely, of course. Megan chose to elaborate on the subject of women in Magic and brought up some very specific points, like the lack of women in coverage and a term that she calls girlfriendification. How did you all feel about her article?
I thought it was very well done. I really agreed with a lot of the things that she said. There were things that definitely did resonate with me. And I think that one of the things I really enjoyed that she mentioned in the article was that she, you know, herself has been guilty of, you know, misconceptions, you know, seeing another woman in a tournament and maybe just assuming that she's somebody's girlfriend, that she's, you know, not infallible. And I've sometimes, you know, done the same thing. Like, I try to sniff out, like, are they here to play? Are they just here to hang out? And sometimes, you know, that's what happens. And I thought that she presented everything in a nice, straightforward, and professional manner. I really did enjoy what she had to say.
Yeah, I found that some of her points were similar to some of the points that Gabby Spartz made in her article, especially the bits about visibility and about sort of eliminating like sexist language from your common vernacular when you're at tournaments. One of the things that stood out to me the most was that she talked about not just eliminating any kind of like sexist like wordings, like saying, oh, you're good for a girl, or like, oh, are you someone's girlfriend, whatever. I think we touched on this in the last episode that like there are some questions you can ask a player at the beginning of a match that are kind of like leading questions, and they're not necessarily sexist in tone, but they're the kind of questions that you don't hear male players asking other male players, like, you know, who taught you to play, things like that. And I thought it was cool that she called that out, because I feel like that's something that sort of slips your mind, like you don't always think about it. And yeah, it was good that she brought that to the forefront.
I also like how she encouraged people to be supportive of people that maybe just play casually, or they only are kitchen table players, to be like, you know, yeah, you should come to a competitive event sometime and play. Like, it's not, you know, a big scary thing, you know, to encourage them, you know, to at least give it a try, because it's really not too much of a scary place. Once you've been there once, you've been there a million times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the things that she pointed out just about being respectful, and like Hallie said, with what questions you ask and what terms you use can be applied not only to women, but other, you know, groups that might not be represented fully in Magic. And I think the biggest one that comes to mind for me is age. Like, I've seen a lot of, you know, young kids playing, like, 8 to 12-year-olds or whatever, and people sit down and they're like, oh, are you here with your dad? And they're like, no, I'm here to play Magic. Right. And it can happen to more than just, you know, just women. So I just wanted to bring up the groups that might not be always fully represented and how we should be inclusive of them as well.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciated the way that Megan, you know, admitted her own shortcomings, because I feel like when women start discussions like this, I feel like people like to point out their shortcomings. So, for example, in the comments, there were people that said, well, your show is called The Girlfriend Bracket. How is that helpful? What does that mean? And I was like, well, it means that this is a term that was used to label something negative and imply that we were not very good, and we've chosen to reclaim that. Or people will say, like I've had people say to me, well, you make comments about male players' appearances. You don't like it when we do it. And it's very important to be like, we're human too. Like, we're learning. We get better with every episode. You know, like, there was, you know, a story that we told in the last episode that we could have handled a little better, and or the episode before that, and we made it a learning experience, and we won't do it again. And I think it's important to note that we are human, and that, you know, we're not trying to say that we're above other people. It's important to say that we sometimes do these things too, but the important thing is to admit that we do it and to be aware of it, and not just say we don't do these things, because I think that's a trap.
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely sat across from females at tournaments and kind of thought to myself, like, oh, this will be an easy match. And that's exactly what we're trying to break. And I guess it just goes to show you, like, how ingrained this stuff can really be, because that's exactly what I want other people to not do to me. And I was like, oh, that's horrible that I'm doing that. I should really try and change that. But it doesn't just happen overnight. It's a process for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
The only quibble that I had with Megan's article, and to a certain extent with Gabby's, is that I worry that the only time women are given the opportunity to write for a big site is when they write about women in Magic. Like, I don't think we've seen Gabby do a strategy article yet. And that might be her own personal choice. Like, that's no shade to her. But, you know, I know that she's a really good player. Like, she's scary good. And she's a great streamer. Like, I would love to see her do a Modern Masters draft. I would love to see her play Abzan Aggro or write about it, or even Merfolk for that matter. Or even Megan. You know, I know that Megan fancies herself as more of a casual player, but I would still love her opinion on things. And we do have Jadeen writing for TCG Player now, which is fantastic, but I just worry that that's the only time that we're given these opportunities, is to only talk about this issue. I'd really like to see us talk about other things and have it be, you know, just more than this.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I did actually get to hang out with Megan during the main event at GP Vegas, because we were playing in the same section and we're in the same bracket for a while. So we were just chatting. And she is a really good player. I watched her play a match against Black White Spirits, and I thought she played it incredibly tightly. And I would really love to hear more strategy from her, and for Gabby for that matter. So yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, I was with the Magic the Amateuring girls in Minneapolis. Like, the story that Megan talks about in her article, where the guy said, you're not here to make friends, I was watching that happen. Like, I was there for that incident. And she was playing Jeskai Ascendancy, which is not easy to play. No. And I agree with you, Hallie. She was tight. Like, she explained the combo. She played very seamlessly. I couldn't have done that. So I think that she deserves a lot more credit than just, you know, she's more than just the improv comedy girl. She's more than just the Magic the Amateuring girl. She's a really good player, and I'd love to see that side of her.
Yeah, for sure.
And there was a few comments of people that were like, you know, I agree with the points you're saying. I liked the article, but, and there was like always a but, you know, why, like, a woman should not be writing this, because that's just bringing more attention to the issue, and we should just, you know, brush it under the rug and pretend like it's not happening, because we can't move past it if everybody's making a big deal of it. And it seemed like a lot of people were of that opinion, and I was like, well, you know, I don't see a lot of men writing this article, so I don't see why it's a problem for a female to write it either. And a lot of people were saying, like, she doesn't have any credentials and she shouldn't be writing, or whatever negative things people are going to say.
Oh, do we? She covers that in the article too. The idea that, you know, women are held to the standard that a lot of men are not held to. Like, let's go through the roster of each major website and see how many of these guys have made the Pro Tour, how many of them have played at Worlds, how many of them have won Grand Prix. You know, I think that's a really wicked double standard.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So I just, you know, I hope that people, like, can respect what she's doing, even if they don't necessarily, you know, agree with the points the article had or whatever. But I feel like, you know, it was a well-written article, and I feel like people should respect that just for that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I feel like the comments that are generated by a post like this are the exact reason why we need more articles like this. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Where it's like, when you see the things people say, you realize how much more work there is to do, and you realize why articles like this are necessary, and why getting a woman in coverage is necessary, and why, you know, just so many things are necessary. And it just kind of, it proves the point for us, where it's like, you, hello, like, you see some of the things people say, you see the buts, as you said, you know, with, you know, this is great, but you see the let's brush this under the rug. You see the women who do the, I haven't experienced this, so everything is fine. You know, you see so many problematic things, and you just kind of want to wave your finger at it and be like, this is why we need to discuss this over and over, because people still don't get it. And they, I don't know why, but it's just very frustrating, because there's so much evidence as to why this is still an issue.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, the most frustrating thing when reading through comment sections like that is hearing people try to make and try to force the exact points that she's refuting in the article. Like, that's the most mind-boggling thing to me.
Yeah. So, but bottom line, it was a great article. I would love to see her do more outside of this topic, and I hope she gets a chance to do it, and that other women do too. Moving on, some friends of ours in Vegas, who will remain nameless, were very excited to meet some of their favorite pro players. And they said to you, Katie, I believe, that they were a little disappointed by the experience. So can you elaborate on that at all?
Yeah. And it's not just this time. I've heard this from a few people who are like, you know, I went up and I was really excited to meet so-and-so, who's a famous player, and get their signature. And then they're very underwhelmed or have a negative experience. And that's not to say every pro player is just, like, mean or whatever. But, you know, I keep hearing this kind of repeating where people go up and they have a, you know, less than pleasant experience, where maybe the person's, like, not having a good day or whatever it is. And they're just like, hey, here's your signature on your playmat, go away. Without necessarily saying those words. But it kind of keeps coming up, and I was just wondering what we thought about pro players having, do they have an obligation to be good ambassadors for the game? Because when you make the Pro Tour and you win a Pro Tour, it's not necessarily your goal to be a representative of the game, but that's kind of what you become.
It's a good question. What do you girls think?
I think it's a touchy subject, because on the one hand, like, I do feel like the pros do have that responsibility, but sometimes you have to remember that, you know, the game can take an emotional toll on you. And if you're not having a great day in your tournament, and, you know, you have strangers coming up to you and giving you a lot of attention, sometimes, you know, if you're a more introverted person, your inclination is to sort of want to be alone and, like, concentrate. I feel like that's not really what you want, or it can be tough to deal with. So, I mean, one thing I like that I've seen at some larger events is they'll have, like, a meet and greet with a pro, usually, like, the day before the tournament starts, where, like, if there's a pro player, like, I know Brian Kibler had one recently, where you could, like, go to a GP and meet Brian Kibler and get him to sign your playmat, whatever. I think that's cool that you have an opportunity to, like, meet them in, like, a low-stress environment where, like, they are dedicated to seeing their fans. But when you just kind of come up to someone during a tournament, like, when they're essentially, like, at work doing their job, I mean, it can be kind of touchy.
I agree. I just think it's important for them, even if they're having, you know, a lot of stress or something bad happened, to still try to, at least, you know, be polite, be somewhat friendly. They don't have to have, like, the longest conversation with you and tell you everything about their life, but at least, you know, be pleasant so that someone doesn't get that bad rub. It's kind of like meeting your favorite celebrity or, you know, sports person, and they kind of brush you off, or they don't act very polite, and you're like, oh, well, this person I look up to, I admire them, and then they just kind of acted like I was just a little scrub that they didn't have time to deal with. That doesn't make anybody feel good either.
Yeah, I think that every player has an obligation to be an ambassador to the game. I think that pro players have a little bit more responsibility because of how visible they are and how much influence they can have over players. Like, we've discussed it before in the past, you know, if these guys talk about deck lists, people will want to play that deck and then buy those cards. And, you know, they do have a lot of sway over people. With that said, though, I think that there's no primer or guidebook on how to be famous, because that's really what it is. And you have to understand that these guys came out of nowhere. You know, these guys went from being just another name on a pairings list to you've won a GP, you've won a pro tour, now you're writing for a major content site, now you're streaming, now you have a sponsor, now you're on a team, now you have people flooding your mentions saying, please look at my deck list. Now you have to train and practice to be able to maintain this lifestyle that you've been thrust into. And I'm not saying this makes it okay, but I can understand how some people are still trying to find their footing in this new life of theirs. And there are some people that we've seen deal with it really well. Like, for example, Reed Duke. Reed Duke's done a fantastic job of maintaining a public image, letting you see glimpses of his personality, but not giving you too much and not completely throwing the door open on his personal life, and still being professional, still treating his readers a certain way. And then there are pros that we've seen that have been in the circuit for years that still haven't quite got it down pat yet. And there's no real, like, you know, set rules as to how to do that. So I think that there are some pros who've adapted really well to all of the circumstances, and then there are some who are still finding their footing. And I would like to think that that wouldn't be held against them, or that maybe we'd be able to say, to tell the difference between somebody being really, really rude and somebody else who just got done with a feature match really has to pee. Now it's just a bad time. You know, I think that there might be, I think that there are chances to make amends, you know, or to see if that was just a first impression or they really are like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a thing that the judge committee created this last year called the Judge Code of Conduct, and it has different kind of guidelines that judges have to follow, especially in regards to like social media. It's like, if you're wearing your black shirt out in public, you have to kind of act a certain way. If you have your black judge shirt on in your profile picture, there's some things on social media you cannot say, and kind of a guideline for that to make a good, you know, representation of the judge community no matter where you're at. Do you think something like that for maybe just say the Hall of Famers would be good? Because there's a big hubbub about cyberbullying when Crackgate happened. And I saw some people comparing Goyfgate to that and kind of tweeting at Helene and being like, hey, they're being bullies, even if, you know, just because they're famous, are they going to get away with it? And it's kind of an issue, I think, that needs to be addressed that not a lot of people are talking about.
That's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that, actually.
I feel like sometimes they just, and that's a very broad they, but, you know, people on social media being mean to other people, especially when you're a very well-known person in the community, I feel like something should be in place to kind of police that. Like, I'm all for freedom of speech, but I'm not for hurting people's feelings, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely understand. Or there should be some consequence for that. Like, I know Owen recently apologized for his part in Goyfgate, and I think he said he was even going to be taking a break from creating content for a while.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear that.
Neither did I.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he mentioned that in the apology.
Yep, down at the bottom, saying he's going to just take a step back and think about, I think he said something along the lines of, like, thinking about what it means to be this involved in this game and some self-reflection time.
I mean, you see people lose their positions for cheating. You know, why shouldn't there be any consequence for, you know, not behaving well at tournaments? I can see that. The only thing I'm concerned about, I guess, as somebody who's also a visible figure in the community is, you know, I'm certainly up for something like that, but I think that it's tricky because part of the reason that people like you is because of your personality. So you don't want to go too corporate and too buttoned up. You know, you still want to be able to be yourself, because otherwise you're just going to be this machine who retweets your writing. That's all you do. You know, people want to see that you have a crappy day, or people want to see that you really enjoyed this movie, or that you, you know, I don't know. Like, I worry that something like that could be too restricting.
Yeah, it's definitely a very, like, fine line, but I think that it's something that should start to come up in discussion, because I feel like it's unfair, I guess, for people to get away with stuff just because of who they are.
Sure, I agree with that. And I'd be open to, I guess I'm definitely open to the idea. I'm just concerned as to what the guidelines would be, and that they might be too strict or too, yeah.
It seems like it could be subjective, too.
Yeah. Because there are certain pros who definitely made their names for being sort of caustic and being sort of trolly. And I know that there have been a couple that I didn't know how to take, and that led me to either blocking them on Twitter or thinking they were not very nice people. Come to find out that that's just who they are, that's their sense of humor, you know, and it wasn't like that at all. So, you know, that could be something else that could make, you know, creating rules like that difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the judge code of conduct is very general. It's just like, you know, try to be a good representative. I don't have it pulled up, so I'm not sure exactly what it says.
Why not?
It's like a 2-page document, so it's not like they're specifically like, hey, you can't say this curse word in this time, you know. It's just, and then if there's something that happens, you can do like reports of certain people, and then the committee goes through and decides how to handle that, whether or not there's no penalty, or if they just talk to them, or if there's something more serious than that. I just feel like something like that for big figures in the community wouldn't be necessarily a bad idea.
Well, there goes me. Nice knowing you girls. You'll have to find a new co-host. I can see it now. So last but not least, the Duels Origins gameplay trailer was released the other day at E3, I think. And yeah. We got a sneak preview of some cards that might be in Origins. One of them was called Chandra's Ignition. Immediately, the R. Kelly parodies came out. This is Chandra's, this is Chandra's Ignition. Na, 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 na. God bless them. We saw Liliana, Heretical Healer, see some play in the trailer. I thought this was pretty exciting. Like, I would play Duels this time around.
Yeah, I'll probably put it on my tablet or something.
Yeah. Have you guys played Duels in the past?
I have played a little bit of it. Robert had it on his Kindle for a bit, and I tried it. And since I'm used to Magic Online, I was just completely confused. Like, how do you tap your mana? Like, how does this work? But I don't know. Like, it's kind of like a, I don't know. Like, Duels is very geared towards like people who are learning the game, and so I feel like I'm not necessarily the target audience for it. But there are some aspects of it that are fun.
Yeah, if only MTGO looked like Duels.
Yes, exactly.
Duels is beautiful. Like, whoever's in charge of that whole thing deserves a medal. Now, if we could just maybe get some of those people to work on MTGO, I think things would be fantastic.
Yeah, one thing I kind of wish would happen is if Duels and MTGO were merged somehow. Like, I know the MTGO Hearthstone comparison debate comes up all the time, and like, you know, how are these similar? What can they learn from each other? And I think one of the cool things about programs like Hearthstone is that they have like an AI built in that teaches you how to play the game. And I feel like having Duels integrated with something like Magic Online would help people, especially people who are newer to the game, bridge the gap from, you know, playing casually to playing on MTGO, like, a lot easier.
Yeah, I'd be up for that.
I feel like I can't bridge that gap still.
Yeah.
I mean, I play a lot of Magic, but it feels like a steep learning curve. I feel like I'll just click the wrong thing and lose the game.
Yeah, I have lost a lot of games to misclicks. But right now that I've started streaming, I made a little index card that has all the MTGO shortcuts, like all the F keys on it with like what they do, just like sitting in front of my my desktop. So I won't make that mistake again. Cause like there was a time I was streaming like 2 weeks ago and like I pushed F6 instead of F4 and I lost the game because of it. So won't make that mistake again.
You should have Kirby as your punt counter. You know how some people have that? Like, you should just have, like, a picture of him. And then when you punt, there'd be, like, a woof, and he would just keep track. And maybe you could keep track of it with, like, bones or something.
Yeah. I really want to get, like, a graphic artist or somebody to make, like, some original graphics that I can put up on my stream. Because right now it's kind of bare bones. Like, I don't want to infringe on any, like, intellectual property stuff. But, yeah, pretty soon I want to add more, like, colors and graphics and fonts and Kirby and stuff. So that'll be forthcoming for sure.
Cool. So listener question this week, be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We are happy to answer any and all questions that you may have for us. And our question this week comes from a gentleman named Tim Obel. And Tim says, "Hi, ladies. I really enjoy the show. It's great to hear all the different perspectives that the four of you bring to the table, and it really gives me good things to think about every time that I listen. I was curious about some more specifics about each of you as Magic players. What card do you think embodies you, either personally or just your playstyle? And what card do you think embodies the show as a whole? I've heard about you playing specific decks, but apart from Aaron always wanting to play Jund, and even then I couldn't pick out a particular card except for maybe Thoughtseize. I don't have a good perspective on what you love about playing Magic and the cards that represent that. For instance, the card Living End would be mine. Yay! As my favorite archetype is Graveyard Shenanigans, and I always love decks that have an incredibly goofy path to their win condition, and Living End is very goofy. Thanks again for the show."
Me personally, I thought of Syncopate, because it's a counterspell. Obviously, like that, like blue. the girl in there, I think her hair does remind me very much of my own.
Yeah.
And she just like got that whole like no sass thing and be like, "You're not going to do this unless I say so." And, you know, being a control player and trying to be, you know, in control of my own life and the things I do in it, I think that very much, reminds me of myself. And then when I was at work today, I was trying to think of ones that reminded me of the podcast in general. And then I started thinking about cards that reminded me of all of you in some way. And I was thinking, like, for Aaron, I thought of Den Protector. Because Aaron is a very protective person. And she's very protective of the things that she cares about, the people that she cares about. And, you know, the whole flip, you know, mechanic where you morph them. You know, people might, you know, see her as one way, but they don't really get, you know, maybe to know her and the person that she really is. And I thought that there was that too. And then for Katie, all I kept thinking of was Deputy of Acquittals. I don't know why. And I was just like, I just love Deputy of the Acquittals. And I think that Katie embodies that. And then for Hallie, I was thinking, you know, Hallie may be a smaller, quiet person, but damn if I don't think of Lavinia the 10th. Because she has a very commanding presence. You know, you may not know what she's all about, but then she comes out and she's like, "I'm detaining your shit, you." And I think that, and I think that's really cool. And just for the podcast in general, I thought about cards like Assemble the Legion and Collect a Company, Cord, Congregate, you know, all about becoming, you know, stronger together, multiplying more, you know, populating, all that stuff. That's all I kept thinking of and like what the podcast does. And we're trying to bring other people together, women, men, whoever, for something bigger and greater than ourselves.
That's awesome. That's so nice.
Yeah. I have the warm fuzzies right now. Well, I guess for me, I do like Lavinia. But the card that I thought of as representing me was probably Delver of Secrets, for a number of reasons. So, Delver of Secrets, first of all, has the wizard subtype, which is my favorite subtype in all of Magic. All my favorite creatures, including Delver of Secrets and Venser and Snapcaster Mage and Vendilion Click, all have the wizard subtype. So I just love those. I love those cards. I love like good tempo cards. So Delver is sort of like the core of several of pretty much all the decks that I've played in Eternal formats. I've played Delver in Legacy, I play Delver in Modern, and the idea of just getting ahead in the early game and staying ahead is a strategy that I just really latched onto early in my Magic career, and a strategy that makes a lot of sense to me and that I try to stick to in every format that I play because it just kind of works for me. Another thing I love about Delver is that if you look closely at the card, he's what you could refer to as a lepidopterist, so a person who studies butterflies and moths. I know that word because when I was in college, before I was a Magic nerd, I was a big literary nerd. I studied literature in college, and my favorite author was Vladimir Nabokov, who is best known for writing Lolita and a couple other novels in Russian and in English. And he was a lepidopterist. He studied butterflies and moths at Harvard University. And he's just like one of my favorite writers. Every novel that he writes is just like a puzzle that the reader has to solve. And I just love that.
Okay, I can interrupt you for a second. Oh, lepidopterist?
Yeah. Lepidopterist. Yeah. It's a person who studies butterflies and moths.
Lepidopterist.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a dinosaur.
Yeah. On the flip side of the card, he is like a human who's been turned into an insect, and that reminds me of Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka, which is another book that I enjoyed reading in college. So all the literary references just make me so happy. Plus, another cool thing about Delver is that Delver starts off as a tiny 1/1 and he flips into a 3/2 with flying, which is kind of scary and hard to deal with. And I identify a lot with that because as Chris said, I'm a tiny person. I'm 5'2" and really skinny. And I don't look very scary. Like when I show up to a Magic event and I sit down at the table, I'm sure my opponent just kind of looks at me and is like, oh, you're a pushover. And then I don't know.
And you then turn into a shrieking flying insect that's hard to deal with.
Exactly.
That's so great.
Yeah. So those are all the reasons why I love Delver.
Oh man, if we ever get to the point where we have tokens made, we need to, I mean, it's not really a token necessarily, but like we just have to have something where like we just have to, you know how the MTG focus people had like their tokens and they, I don't know, we got to do something with putting you in a Delver, like just the flying Santo or something, I don't know. But
yeah, like my own checklist card or something.
So I picked two cards. For me, I feel like this may be obvious, but Cryptic Command is very representative of me. It's triple blue, and I'm a pretty hardcore blue player. It just does everything that you could ever want Magic card to do. It's just the perfect card. the versatility with it is just amazing. Like, I feel like the card is limited to your knowledge, like what you can make of the card and how you can use it. Like bouncing your own Snapcaster back to your hand is something that is just feels wonderful to do, and getting a lot of value out of it. And it's just limited to your imagination and what you can make of it. And then the other card that I often feel like embodies me is Little Girl from Unhinged. She costs half a white and she's a 1/2/1/2, and she's creature human child, and her flavor text says, in the future she may be a distinguished leader, a great scholar, or a decorated hero. These days all she does is pee the bed. And it reminds me just to look for it all the time. I really like her. I'd be like her plus a Rancor, like kind of a vicious little girl.
Wait a minute, did you say she pees the bed?
These days all she does is pee the bed.
And this reminds you of you?
I mean, I don't pee the bed. as of recent
anymore.
But I feel like it's just always like she's just a very look forward card for me. Like right now, you might not feel like much, but you know, you could one day be a distinguished leader, a great scholar, or a decorated hero.
I'm still laughing about the pain.
That's fair. I mean, I'm close. In my job, I get peed on a lot, so I'm like halfway there.
Man, tragic foreshadowing.
Yes.
So I have to agree with Chris. You know, for the show, I picked Assemble the Legion as well because, to tell you the truth, I never expected this show to take off. Like, this show was just supposed to be a side project of mine. I figured that we would do 4 or 5 episodes and either you all would get, you know, you all would lose interest or I would lose interest or nobody would listen to us. And I'm constantly amazed by how much this show has taken off. We cracked 520 followers the other day. Yay. And we've only been around for 3 months and we have 23 5-star reviews on iTunes. The letters that we receive from people, the stories that people share with us, we really have kind of started this mini movement. And I did not expect this when I started the show. Like, I thought we were just going to be 4 girls who talk about magic, maybe talk a little trash, and somehow we've started this thing. And so when I look at Assemble the Legion, you know, I really do feel like we have sort of started this thing, and that, you know, TSG even said, he's like, you know, you all picked a really good time to come out because this was such a hot topic and it's just kind of taken off and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And then for the, I didn't really pick a card that describes me. I picked more of a play style. So I picked Dredge, of course. But the reason being is that, you know, I pride myself on being a very original person. You know, I don't like wearing what other people wear. I try to bring something new to the table in whatever I do, be my work life, my personal life, my style, when I'm creating content. You know, I always try to say, what is nobody else doing that I can do? And, you know, one of the main things I keep hearing about Dredge is it operates on such a different axis, where there's just no other deck that really does what it does, where you might Sphinx's Revelation for 8, and yeah, girl, that's really cute, but I've got technically a 50 card hand right here, like between my hand and my graveyard. What do you got? You know, like between the flashbacks and the retraces and the Icaritting and the bloodgasting and the Loman and the Poxen, you know, it's just, there's just nothing else like it out there. And that's what I like to think of myself as. And I like to think of myself as an original, and I like to, you know, operate on a different axis. And I also like the, I'm trying to think of the word for it, but just the sheer number of options. You know, like, I'm somebody who likes to think very big picture. I'm always putting things together. I'm always wondering what's going to happen with what. And I don't like being put in situations that I have no control over. So I like being able to have options. Like, if something bad is happening to me, the first thing I say is, all right, what can I do about this? What are my choices? And it's very rare that I feel like I'm in a situation where I have no options. And when you're playing with a deck like Dredge, it's like, okay, I can draw, I can dredge, I can flashback this, I can sacrifice this. And that's very much my play style. Like, part of the reason I struggle with aggro decks is because they're very linear and you don't really have a plan B. I want a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. And that makes me feel very safe and secure. So that's why I gravitate towards, you know, Dredge as a strategy, because all of that kind of embodies me and how I function.
I'll always think of you as Den Protector.
Word.
Is it because I'll cut people? Like, I've got a big axe, like, cut you!
Partly that, yeah.
I mean, I really will cut someone. I mean, children love me. Like, I have a really uncanny ability with babies. Like, I'm a sucker for cute babies as well. So I guess that makes sense.
I'm so bad at kids.
Me too.
Like, it's horrible. I feel like I treat them like dogs because I don't know how to, like, interact with them. But I, like, pat my leg and I'm like, come here. And then I'm like, this is probably not how you do it. I just don't know. I have never had, like, people around me who have had kids, and I don't have any younger siblings or cousins that live here, anything. So I've never had experience dealing with kids.
Yeah, I'm an only child and I was an only grandchild. So I didn't really interact with many kids like when I was a kid. And I feel like I've just never learned how to deal with them.
See, I love babies, but I love giving them back more. So, like, when they're well behaved and they're cute, they're fine. But if it starts screaming and pooping and shrilling, can you take this, please? Like, I don't know what it wants. Can you maybe just zap it with a taser for a little while? I don't know. Just, I can't deal with that. But I am just a sucker for a cute baby. Like, if we ever go to, like, the grocery store and there's a baby, I just melt. Like, I turn into this cooing, like, to start making faces, and the parents get really weirded out. And I love cute babies, especially fat babies. Like, I love, like, babies that have little chubby arms and little chubby legs. It's like, I just want to chew on your little legs, and where are you going? Oh crap. And I just love fat babies.
I feel like they're so alien. Like, I just stare at them and I'm like, ugh. I don't know. Like, it could be plotting something in that little brain of its. I don't know.
True dad. I'm not good with kids either.
Aaron's the only one.
Am I the only one? Oh, wow. It's funny. You say that I'm the den protector. And I get called maternal, and yet I really don't want children. Like, I love children, but I can't ever see myself actually having one. Like, the thought of being responsible for one scares the crap out of me. I can't even remember to keep my cat's litter box clean. I can't even remember to take my hormone pills, much less having to take care of a small being. Forget that.
They're a lot of work, I've heard.
Yeah.
So I hear, yeah.
And money. Ugh. So expensive.
So speaking of planning, Katie, you told us that you are planning another one of your famous judge conferences soon. What's going to be going on there?
So for once, I'm not in charge of it, which is awesome. I like that. There's a judge conference down in Casper, Wyoming this weekend, and I was asked if I would like to do a presentation, and I didn't want to do a full half hour one because they're in like 20 minute or half hour blocks, and they're doing something kind of neat at this one where you do 300 seconds of glory, which is 5 minutes where you get to pick a topic and just talk about it for 5 minutes. I don't think there's a question and answer period, so you just get up there, talk, sit down, listen to the like half hour block. So you're kind of like an intro man. So I'm doing my 5 minutes of glory on the differences in USC major and minor and aggression, which I haven't started working on, so don't tell them, but I'll get it done. And it's really exciting. I feel like there's going to be probably 60 plus judges there. It's right in the middle of Wyoming, so some of the Montana people are going down. Some people from Colorado are coming up. I'm sure there will be some people from Utah. And it's just a really great experience. Every judge conference, like official judge conference I've been to, has been a lot of fun. You get to learn. You don't have to pretend like you know everything. Everybody's really nice. You play games. I'm really excited. So hopefully next week I'll have something exciting to share with you all that I learned.
Awesome.
I'm just glad to see that you survived the escape room.
Yeah, I was checking social media to make sure Katie was alive.
Me too.
So I went in, and it's in the basement underneath a restaurant that's very well known, and it's like a nice building. It's not like a dingy, crappy basement. But I went down and I beat the people there that were running it. And there was this unfinished room that had these double doors, and it's like dirt floor and sidewalling, no walls up. I don't know what it's called, but and there was like no lights on in this room. And I was trying to figure out, and I tried all the doors, and all the doors were locked, and I was like, well, maybe part of the puzzle is you have to figure out how to get in there. So I'm like walking around, and I go inside this place, and it was really creepy, so I left, and I was like, I'll just wait for them to come get me. And they eventually showed up, and it was me and two other people. There was supposed to be five of us total, but two of the other beta testers didn't make it or couldn't find it. I'm not really sure what happened to them.
Yeah, they didn't make it.
Didn't make it. Maybe they were killed on the way in. I don't know. But they shut us in this room, and they had a storyline, and it was there was like a spy guy who had stolen some important documents, and we were stealing them back from his office while he was away. And so we had 1 hour, and we were put in this room, and they started you out with like this DVD that you watched, and then there was subsequent clues and puzzles and different things you had to figure out that led you to escaping the room, like finding what you had to do and then escape. And we finished it with a minute 20 left on the clock, but they had to give us some hints. They were trying to make sure that it worked well, like all their clues weren't too hard and whatnot. And sometimes we were just like stuck, so we just kind of sat there, and then they'd like slide a little hint under the door. But the hints were also cryptic. They were like also little weird riddles and stuff that we had to figure out.
Were they cryptic commands?
They were kind of cryptic commands. That's my favorite thing. But they had two little, like, of those home camera things set up so that they could watch how well we were doing and hear us talking through it so that they knew if they were on track with it or not. But it was so much fun. When we solved it, like, we all cheered, which you wouldn't expect three grown people to be like, yeah, we did it. And then they came in and they were like, good job. And we did a debrief with them. And they're doing, so this one was very puzzle based, very clue based. They're doing another one for October, starting for Halloween. That's going to be more like seance based, is the theme. And so it's going to be really interactive with, I guess, things in there kind of scaring you, kind of. I don't know exactly what they have planned, but the Big Bang Theory did their take on it a couple episodes before the season finale, and in their room there was like a zombie guy who was like coming out of the wall, so maybe something like that will happen. But it was a lot of fun. I definitely recommend doing it for all the people in Bozeman, which there's not very many, but all the people, if you have an escape room near you, I think you should try it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, if we ever get together again as a foursome, we should totally do it together. Like, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Agreed. We won't leave Katie behind.
Yay. Yeah, it was definitely going in, I was like, I think this will be, like, kind of fun, like, something different to do. But at the end, I was like, God, that was so much fun. I was, like, really amped up.
It kind of sounds like True Dungeon a little bit. Have you ever done that before?
No, I haven't heard of that.
Okay, True Dungeon is basically, the way I like to describe it is if you combined D&D with a haunted house. So you take like a haunted house, but make it like a dungeon, like Dungeons and Dragons. And then you're going from room to room to room and doing these challenges. That's basically what True Dungeon is. They have it at Gen Con every year.
Oh, that sounds super fun. Wait, yeah. Are you like hitting people with swords and stuff? Like,
no,
in D&D?
You have like a, it's almost like an air hockey table. Like you have these pucks and then you put your weapon coin in the puck and then you like aim it at you slide it across the board and the board has like a bullseye on it. And if you slide the puck at like the head, then you've hit the dragon or whatever in the head. And if your puck completely misses, your weapon completely misses. And that's the way that you do combat.
I see. So is every room different then?
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically like, you know, you're going through the forest and then once you beat the forest challenge, then you're in the fire cave and then you have like the throne room challenge. And typically at the end, they have this big boss and it's a more of an elaborate costume kind of thing.
Oh, neat. Is that like something that's done like nationwide? Like I know escape rooms are all over. Is that just like a Gen Con thing?
I've only ever seen it at Gen Con, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was maybe at other cons. I'm not positive.
I've never been to a con. I should go to one.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun if you ever get the chance. So anything else before we wrap up the show?
Last Sunday, so a few days ago, I was on my friend Paul, who I've talked about before. He has a Facebook group called Scam Artist Debate Group, and SCAM stands for Superhero, Comic Book, Anime, and Manga. And so you just talk about those various topics. There's even like a magic thread on there. And they wanted the women in the group to do like a quiz show type thing with them where they would ask us questions. And then out of the three groups that they have, the top three people go up against each other to be crowned the queen. So I did that last Sunday with them, and I won out of my group, so now I just have to find out when we're gonna do like the final showdown type thing, and I guess I get like a t-shirt and some other cool stuff. So answered some dorky questions that I knew the answers to, and it was a lot of fun.
Yay, that's awesome.
Very cool. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us on the Girlfriend Bracket, how can they find you all? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter and Twitch at HalCanSam. That's HalCanSam. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com, and you can read my articles here on gatheringmagic.com.
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at KatieN_14, Katie.Neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is TEHKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ. That's yo to Chris. And my Tumblr is also to Chris.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. You can find the show first and foremost on gatheringmagic.com. On Twitter, we are at the GF bracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.